Watching Consider This with me, Melissa Idris and Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation with Cheryl Fernando from Global School Leaders. Now, Cheryl, we've spoken about teachers and how they've responded to COVID-19. You painted a very inspiring and optimistic picture of teachers adapting to the changes. I want to talk a little bit about the role of school leaders and principals and how they've been responding to this. How should we be thinking about empowering school leaders and principals to, I guess, curate or to customize the response of teaching and learning in their respective schools?
Yeah, so I guess in this crisis, we can look at the school leader as the chief, the person who is supposed to be in charge of information and being inspiring to the teachers. And for us, it's very important for the school leaders to set an example. So if the school leader is not on board with technology, it's very difficult for him or her to encourage their teachers to do the same. So we always encourage our school leaders to be the first ones to show the teachers examples on how to use technology, to have their meetings online. We even had a school leader who had their Majlis Persaraan, who had the retirement ceremony online for one of the teachers. So we are seeing so many innovative ways, but it's always the leader who has to start. If the leader is not on board, it's very difficult for the teachers, or the teachers will do it in pockets. But to get everyone on board, the school leader has to be the one driving it. And I think herein lies the very important question of the ministry giving empowerment to school leaders to be able to do this on their own, to be able to decide for themselves what is best for their schools, because not all schools are the same. Some schools, the school leaders are just working on community issues. They are helping families get basic needs, and they're helping their students get basic food supplies. But in some schools, they are more advanced. So the school leader must be able to have that empowerment to decide what is best for their school and how best what they deem fit in this time of crisis. Mm.
Cheryl, the difference that you see, is it mapped onto other kind of demographic issues or social issues? I mean, are we looking at urban schools or cities, schools in cities and suburbs doing much better than rural schools? I mean, do we know if there are regional differences where, you know, the more affluent parts of the country are racing ahead while those that are economic less so are not? Do we have any sense of how that is panning out?
So for the schools I work with the schools in KL. We see the issue of urban poor, of course, being one of it. And in many of our schools, the students who are from the B40 communities, they have problems because they don't have access to digital devices. So the digital divide is there. At least when everyone was going to school, it was somewhat of an equal playing field. So every student could get access to that education. But now it's the students who have devices and they have data, they have access. The students who don't, they do not have access. And it's happening in many of the urban schools as well that we work with, even places like TJ and Damansara as well.
But Cheryl, how does this impact the teachers? So we talked about the students, but how does that impact teachers in wanting to deliver and wanting to do their best for their kids? How does that impact them?
So one of the things that we tell our teachers is when you look at the Maslow hierarchy of needs, so we tell them if the bottom part is not achieved, the safety, their physiological needs is not achieved, it's very difficult to talk about learning. So a lot of times we see teachers, especially school leaders as well, trying to help the students get by with the basic amenities. The school leaders that we work with, they reach out to corporates to get them to help the students, and then only they think about learning. Because this is not the business as usual. These times are different. So I think it's okay to ensure that the students are getting their basic needs first before looking at their learning.
I'm wondering whether there's an opportunity here, Cheryl, for us to kind of look at other countries and see what they're doing, learn from their perhaps experiences and best practices. I understand you participated in a webinar recently. You spoke to the former Minister of Education from Liberia about how they dealt with the Ebola crisis. What were some of the learnings you can share with us?
Yeah, so I think when he shared with us about the crisis in Liberia, the few things that he said is they really focused on communication. So they wanted to ensure that everyone was getting a clear communication, whether it was school leaders, whether it was teachers and students, onto like what they're supposed to do now, how much they're going to learn, how long the lockdown will last for, and that was very important for them as well. And he also talked about they used a lot of open sources, like they used the government, they used the radio channels and TV channels to help their students. And he also spoke about the reopening of schools. And that's when he said that this is really a time for reform. This is really a time for us to reimagine education because we speak so much about this, but no opportunity to do so. So this is the time for us to reimagine education.
And how would you reimagine education for Malaysian students and teachers as well, Cheryl?
So I think firstly, for it to be more student-centred, rather than teacher-centred. Right now, the traditional, I mean, before COVID, the traditional classroom is still very teacher-centred. And that's why we find a lot of our students struggling with higher-order thinking, and they're struggling to answer questions when they go for job interviews. But if the classroom is more student-centred, we can focus it more on students, we can focus on higher-order thinking for our students to make learning more meaningful for them, rather than just based on exams and studying to get A's. So learning has to be very meaningful and it has to be student-centred.
Yes, Cheryl, can I just ask for a clarification? When you say it's teacher-centred now, you mean the teacher is the one that's giving the information, as
yeah.
opposed to student-centred, where the teacher enables or facilitates the children studying. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. And I also want to get you to clarify. So you said that the former Minister of Education in Liberia focused a lot on communication. Are we focused a lot on communication and the communication between which kind of parties?
So right now, a lot of our teachers, they get the information from the Ministry of Education. So I think while the ministry is doing a good job communicating, it's a bit piecemeal here and there. So it'll be good if teachers can see like a clear plan on what's going to happen in the next few months. And I know it's quite unfair to say this because I'm sure the ministry is still thinking about it, but it'll be nice for teachers to have some sort of direction on like, okay, so for this month, this is what's going to happen, and then next month, this is what's going to happen, this is how learning will look like. It's nice to have like some sort of direction. And I know there's no playbook for education in pandemic, but it'll still be good to see like some sort of a clear action plan from the ministry.
Cheryl, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight, and thank you for the good work that you and your team do, and happy Teachers' Day to you and all educators. That's all the time we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me, Sharad Kutin, signing off this evening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.